you're with me, give a shout. Hey! I'll lead you all the way into the glory days.
We'll begin a life of prime decades.
Are you out or in? Make your choice now, sink or swim.
You can stick with me or stay behind and pout.
What's it gonna be?
Consider carefully.
Are you in?
All right, everybody, welcome to
Teller of the Tales. Dun, 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 dun.
Yes, and guess what this week is? If you couldn't tell by the opening,
it's Disney Week.
Woo!
Amby would be so proud.
She'd probably be wanting to listen to this episode, like Disney. Oh, Disney fanfic.
She probably might. Like, I don't know. Do you think we got mostly good or bad fanfictions?
I honestly don't know. I am.
Would you be willing to bet?
Betting that it's going to be a lot of bad fan fictions.
I think that there will be at least two good ones.
At least two good ones? I'm thinking there might be at least one.
Hmm.
Yeah, so let's see who actually wins that bet out.
Are we actually betting?
Sure, why not?
What are the terms?
What are the terms? Well, the terms are... I don't know. This is a hard term now. Okay, the terms are, if I win, then you must declare, you must change everything, every one of your avatars into either the Syracuse or the Bulls.
Oh!
actually, wait, you should change all your avatars to Syracuse, and in your avi, you have to have something about Syracuse in your avatar.
That was really hard.
Yeah. And if I lose, then I will admit
to that. No, I have to declare.
Okay.
I have to declare terms. If I win, you're going to have to change all your avatars to something that has to do with a soccer fairy.
What?
A soccer fairy.
Ah, dang it. I don't want to change any of my avatars.
Well, I don't either, so... But wait, so a bad fan fiction would be like...
Bad fan fiction is bad writing, bad... If it comes across bad, completely bad, it can't be coherent.
Okay, so...
A lot of times fan fiction...
So if it's good, so if it's coherent, then it's good.
It's got to be one of the qualities.
Okay, so I say that there's going to be at least two. You say there's only going to be one.
There's going to be at least one.
You say at least.
Yes.
So technically, if I win, you win.
Well, okay, so if there's only going to be one, you say there's two.
There's two.
One of us goes over the... So basically, if both of us go over and there's like three, then the bet, then no one wins.
I said at least two. You said at least one. So I don't know if we can actually do this.
Okay, here. All right, so you're going to say two, and I'm going to say one.
Two. All right.
And if there's three, then the whole bet will not be valid.
Okay.
Please let there be only one. If not, three.
I hope there's two just to screw up you. Okay.
Oh, better not.
Oh,
I don't
want
to lose on any FMA.
I love my avatar. Zelly made it.
Are you kidding me? My avatar's better than yours. Psh.
And Garnet made my one on Skype. So how long will I have to keep the avatars?
Till the next episode.
Okay. I can deal with that.
For a week.
Alright. Deal. Alrighty. So, who's our first person up?
Alright. So, yeah, we should go on to that, shouldn't we? So, the first person up for... Disney Week, Fanfic Week is... Stratofarius, you're up next, so take it away!
Winnie the Pooh and the Tragedy. Rabbit's point of view. I was walking along the 100-acre wood, when suddenly Pooh came running out upsetly, waving his hands in the air. Rabbit, there is a really big problem of massive proportions, he screamed. Come quickly! Come quickly! I ran with Pooh back to the house, but nothing could have prepared me for what I saw. Inside in Pooh's house, Asef was sitting on the bed, one head on his stomach, the other on his spacket. I blinked, looked again, blinked, and looked. No, it was not possible. He couldn't be. No, no, no. But I saw how he looked at his portly stomach, how he grinned as he caressed the bump. He couldn't be pregnant. But he was. What the hell is going on here? I asked. Nobody seemed to answer to me. But when Poe led me aside, I knew something was wrong. It's a donkey, he said. There's a donkey, a fucking donkey growing inside of him. He won't allow me to hurt it. Jesus, rabbit, it's a fucking donkey. I understood how upset he was. Asef was going to die. Because a donkey is the most powerful being in the whole of the earth. More powerful than a Haga, of a Makalu, or even a Yamu. It's only been one day, fucking a day, and he looks 100 months pregnant. Maybe you could take him to the hospital, I asked. Pooh shook his head. He won't let me. Pregnant he may be, but he can still wire those mass knuckles when he wants to. He's seen at his wit's end. It's such a tragedy! I shouted to the high heavens. My shouting brought the attention of Owl, who came running in on his wings. What is going on here? He shouted out loud. They relayed to him the story, and he was indeed shocked by the predicament of Pooh. Well, if there's a donkey in there, we better feed it some of the blood of a warrior, he said. Luckily, I've just smitten Yu-Gi-Oh! He shouted and pulled out the headless corpse. Back to normal POV. What's that? Asked the staff when they returned. It's a gaho, said Pooh. We have to shove his head up your ass to feed the baby. It was an awkward moment, but then it was over. Asef sighed and lay his head back on his pillow. He caressed his enlarged stomach. Are you happy, Eeyore? Are you satisfied now? He cooed. What the fuck is Eeyore? Pooh questioned. Asef smiled tartly at him. I'm naming him Eeyore, because it's a donkey. Donkey names always have to start with E, don't they? He's delusional, Owl said. There's no way a donkey can be allowed to live. No, no, my baby, Asef moaned. Pooh was instantaneously at his side. You're pressuring him, he said. Asef winced. Certainly, there was a large thump. Everyone looked around for the source of the noise. Then he came again, and again, and again, and again. This caught the attention of Tigger, and also Piglet, and even Christopher Robin 1-1. Hoo-hoo-hoo, what is going on here? He said, Tigger. Err! Asef yelled. They all turned to him. He had fallen off the bed and was clutching his stomach. Shit! He's going into labor! Pooh screamed. Moo! Said Piglet. We need to get him to a hospital, hoo-hoo-hoo, said Tigger. He picked Asef up and they put him back on the bed. I'll call an ambulance. No, no time. We need to call Martin Papoose, said Asef and took out an iPhone 4. Martin, we need your help. I cannot help you, but I will bring Matty McFry, he said. Matty McFry was one of the best surgeons in the world, who had learned from Doc Duckington how to deliver donkeys, and he was the only one who could do it. Oh, it's so fucking sore, Asef screamed. Matty came in an instant.
Oh, my goodness, he said.
What is the matter? Said Owl, concerned.
The baby donkey was breakdancing, and it got its tail wrapped around its neck. It's choking to death.
Get him out of me! My baby! Asef screamed.
No, because it is not allowed, said Matty.
I don't care! He's dying! Eeyore! No!
I will have to deliver now, said Matty. He got down on his knees. I can see its head. Shit! It's crowning!
Matty reached up and began to pull the baby out. Asef screamed in utter agony and collapsed. His eyes rolled back into his head and he vomited up a lot of hay. The baby was crying as Matty yanked him out by the tail. One.
It's a boy! He rolled from into the air. Eeyore! Said Pooh in reverence.
Eeyore, my baby, my son, give him to me, Asef croaked.
Matty did so. Asaph's arm formed a protracted cradle around the small baby. He looked down at him with a simpery smile on his face. "Hello, darling. I'm your mummy. You're so beautiful." He pissed.
"It is quite sweat," said Alu.
"Yar, it's adorable," said Christopher, rapping.
They all crowded around the baby. Said the baby. Asaph jumped in concern.
"What's wrong with him?" Al asked.
Said the baby sadly.
"Nothing's wrong with him. He just wants to be alone with his mama," Al explained nonchalantly, like an owl being assaulted by an elf.
"Give us a few moments, then," Asaph said. "Don't you worry, baby. Mama's here. Mama loves you."
"And Dada loves you, too," said Pooh as he walked out.
"Warning! A steady Muto scene is coming up!"
Pooh watched as Asaph cradled Ior in his arms, looking out at him with love. Winnie the Pooh was the happiest bear alive. A tragedy had become a miracle.
Alright, so Stratifarius. Yes, and, hi. You picked a really... how can I put this? Interesting, story, fanfic. Yeah, this was just... how can we explain it? Just utterly...
There's no words at all. You had Kite Runner, you had Winnie the Pooh from Disney, and you had Yu-Gi-Oh! As a headless corpse. And I think I was detecting some Twilight thing in here, because, you know, it's like the baby developing, like, super fast. I don't know.
Possibly. I have no idea. My mind has been blown.
I don't... Oh, God.
I just can't look at Yira the same way now. Thank you. Thank you very much. I want to say, the way you told the story was 10 times better than what your audition was. I really loved how you got into the story. The story itself really wasn't that good, but you made it interesting. You made it enough to where I actually cared about the story and actually wanted to take a listen to it. Because if I was just reading this, I would have just probably gotten like, what the crap? That's not even possible. All that fun stuff. And you know what? You had fun with it, and it really shows. And I have to say is that you got me right in the middle, right as like the Kite Runner guy was delivering Eeyore, or whatever, the donkey. I don't want to know how this is even possible here, but I'm hoping this was at least a female character from Kite Runner, because I've not seen Kite Runner. I'm really hoping so. But you had... right, it's like there was a one line in there. I just can't remember the line now, but like when he was going really in pain, I just laughed because I thought it was absolutely funny because the way you just dramatized it. And you know what? I think this was a really good way to start off the show tonight. Livy?
I mean, like, I just... I don't think I've heard Pooh cuss that much. It was a really weird story, like, really out there. And I took a look at the text version that you sent along with it, and the spelling in there is atrocious. You did a really good job.
Yeah. Hey.
It was ridiculous.
Hey, Olivia. Mm-hmm. Guess what? Mm-hmm. I'm getting closer.
You never know. We've only had one.
I know. Shush. Don't steal
but
my
anyway,
thunder.
You know what? But Zane, I'm trying to judge, so stop it, okay?
Sorry.
But you had a lot of energy, and you were really confident. Like, you really took the story and kind of ran with it. I kind of wonder where you found this. Like, I mean... just how did you stumble across this? But either way, you did a great job. And yes, so. Good job.
All right, so you ready to move on?
Yeah.
Brandon Sparkman, you're up next. So take it away!
Hi, this is Brandon Sparkman. And I'm going to be reading a fanfic of The Lion King called All in a Warthog's Day. It's a short story by Joe McCauley. Please enjoy. The sun was hot and shined brightly on the grasslands that bordered the jungle. Pumbaa was out browsing around for some leafy plants to munch on. The insects he and Timon feasted on the day before left him with a case of indigestion. So for today, he would content himself with a diet of leaves and other plant matter that was easier on his stomach. Suddenly, he thought he heard something. Pumbaa stopped to listen carefully to the sounds around him. He lifted and turned his head slowly, using his ears, eyes, and nose to scan the area around him for any sign of danger. He resumed slowly chewing his mouthful of leaves, but kept his head up and alert. A sudden blur of movement, and Pumbaa knew right away he was the target of a hunt. He reacted quickly, bolting in the opposite direction. The chase was on. Pumbaa knew that his best strategy in the situation was to head for the thick undergrowth of the jungle, where it would be much more difficult for a predator to keep up with him. Unfortunately, his attacker had come from that direction, so he was headed the wrong way. Unless he could outrun his pursuer, he would either have to get turned around or find a burrow. But every time he attempted to turn in that direction, he was cut off. In front of him, he saw a rock with a smooth face on one side. Pumbaa leapt toward that side of the rock, twisted his body a little, and deftly pushed off with his back hooves, making a sudden turn. His pursuer couldn't corner as quickly, and this opened up his lead a little bit, and had him on a better heading for the heavy jungle undergrowth. But it was still quite a ways ahead of him, and his attacker was closing the gap again. Pumbaa saw another rock ahead of him he could use for the same maneuver. As he approached it, he leapt and again turned his body to push off the rock. But he noticed out of the corner of his eye that his attacker was already angling in that direction, so at the last instant he righted himself and aborted the maneuver. A fake! Unfortunately, he stumbled a little bit when he landed, and though he regained his footing quickly, it lost him any distance he might have gained on his pursuer. He was out of ideas for the moment, so all he could do now was to run for all he was worth toward the jungle. He was panting heavily and his legs were getting tired, but he had no other choice. It was all in the nature of being a prey animal, all part of the game. Finally, still well short of the jungle, the hunter was upon him. He could see him beside him, and a moment later he felt a massive paw come over his body and a mouth on the back of his neck. He had one more trick up his sleeve, one last move of desperation. Pumbaa dropped onto one side and tried to roll out from under the animal. If he pulled it off right, he would roll over once and come up on his feet, able to flee while his pursuer fell down and lost a lot of time. It worked. Pumbaa rolled free and resumed his flight toward the jungle. "No way, I got you," a voice called out from behind him. Pumbaa stopped and turned around, panting. "I got away, didn't I?" Simba stood up, also panting, and looked at him. "Only because I was trying not to hurt you." He paused to catch his breath. "You wouldn't have gotten away if I'd been using my teeth and claws like I do when I'm hunting for real." "Okay, I guess you're right," Pumbaa conceded, rubbing the back of his neck against some bushes. "Nice fake you did back there," Simba observed. "If you hadn't stumbled, I probably wouldn't have caught you." "Thanks," said Pumbaa gratefully. "You're getting tough to catch, and I even know most of your tricks," Simba remarked. "Well, you've got quite a few yourself, and you're tough to get away from," Pumbaa countered. Pumbaa was proud of himself. He had developed quite a bag of tricks, any of which might be indispensable if he was attacked by a real predator. He and Timon hadn't been too sure about these hunting exercises when Simba first suggested them. One of the first was over almost before it started, when Simba dropped out of a tree and knocked them over. But a few days later, they looked up, wondering if Simba was waiting to strike again, and they saw a leopard. They didn't hang around to find out whether he was hungry or just resting. After that, they never questioned the value of these games. As for Simba, he knew he'd never go hungry as long as there was anything to hunt. He made sure use of the skills he developed chasing Timon and Pumbaa when hunting real prey. Once they caught their breath, the two of them wandered back to the jungle together, jibing and offering each other tips. Hey, I wonder what Timon's up to, Pumbaa mused. Hey, maybe I can catch him off guard.
All right, so I was really excited when I heard it was Lion King. I love the Lion King. But I think that your story really suffered from kind of like this lack of energy. It kind of really felt almost boring to listen to. I mean, I enjoyed it. It was just kind of, I don't know, I just kind of felt like it dragged because it just didn't really feel your energy with it. I think that if a little bit more, I guess, volume differences, dynamics, voice acting, I think that that would have really helped out. But, I mean, otherwise, it was a good entry.
Yeah. I'd say that this was just okay for me. I mean, in a few spots, I actually heard you to where you were like, you stumbled on a few words, which I don't know, like, because of, I don't know if you did it because you were thinking like, oh no, it's going to be late, but where you actually sent this in, I would say that possibly maybe just a few more times, you could have actually easily maybe have used a few more times to try and perfect that a little bit more, just because of the fact that to keep away from that stumbling. Also, as Lavina did say, that you were very low on energy, especially when they were talking. It kind of was just you saying what they were saying. It just wasn't the actual character. It wasn't Simba. I mean, granted, you don't have to change your voice completely for that, but just change it up a little different than what you're actually telling the story as. Just so that way, as we're listening to the story, we're not going to get bored out of our minds. So, yeah, I really have nothing else to add to what she said about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and darn coherency.
Yep, it's a coherent one. So, right now, you're winning, so...
Yeah, I know, but there's one little problem.
What?
With winning right now. I don't want to be winning so early.
Now, we'll see.
Winning at the last one would be awesome.
That may be me.
Yeah, who knows?
Alrighty.
Alright, so you ready to move on?
Yes.
The Artichoke, you're up next, so take it away!
For as long as anyone in Halloween Town could remember, the Hinterlands had always been a dark and confusing place. No matter how hard you tried to map the area, each path would twist and turn until you were either back where you started, or so deep within the woods you were never seen again. Although he had 5 extra heads to guide him, Hanging Tree was having a very difficult time finding his way back to his beloved home. In addition, his hanged men, Flip, Skip, Chip, Rip, and Mo, were not helping matters any.
"I'm telling you, town's that way," Flip exclaimed, pointing to the path in the east.
"We passed there 3 times," argued Chip.
"Town is south from here, so we take that path."
"Told you we should have stopped and asked for directions," grumbled Mo, who was the smallest of the skeletons.
"Who are we going to ask, a rock?" snapped Rip.
"We should have gone with my plan and cut symbols into the trees."
Hanging Tree glared at Rip. "Bite your tongue, Rip. That's highly offensive to us arbor folk."
"At least we wouldn't be lost," proclaimed Skip. "Why did your Aunt Maple decide to plant her roots clear on the other side of the Hinterlands, anyway?"
"It's not every day that a tree turns 500 years old, Skip," said Hanging Tree. "We were all invited to her party, and it would have been rude if I had left you behind, because..."
"We know," moaned Mo. "Without hanged men, you wouldn't be much of a hanging tree."
The tree chuckled. "Actually, I was going to say because you all suffer from separation anxiety, and would have been crying the minute I cut you from my branches."
"Speaking of separation," said Chip, "do you mind telling Rip to scooch over? His femur's poking my tibia again."
Chip shoved his bony neighbor roughly.
"Is not. Your tibia is poking my femur. You don't even know what a tibia is. Do so. Do not."
Hanging Tree sighed heavily as the other skeletons joined in on the argument. "That's enough," the large tree roared, silencing the hanged men. "Now listen, you 5. All this arguing will not get us home any quicker. Everyone just calm down and study the surroundings carefully. Try to see if anything looks familiar."
Reluctantly, the hanged men grumbled agreements and started to scan the area, looking for any sign of the path they had taken to Aunt Maple's. As Mo strained his eye sockets for the right path, he saw a quick movement in the shadows, as if someone had been running. When he looked, all he saw were barren trees.
Guys, I just saw something move.
The other hanged men and hanging tree looked in Mo's direction, then all around.
I didn't see anything, said the hanging tree.
We didn't either, said Rip, casting Mo an annoyed glare. Which means that, once again, little Mosey is seeing things and wasting our time.
However, Mo wasn't convinced.
No, really, I saw something move. I don't think we're alone out here.
Before anyone could answer, a strange sound filled the air around them. A rapid whirling sound came from all directions, sending their minds into a panic.
What was that? Asked Chip. Sounds like a helicopter, said Rip. What's a helicopter doing in Halloween Land? Asked Flip. Is someone there? Cried Skip.
Hanging Tree turned, scanning the trees for the source of the sound.
Where are you? Show yourself!
Before any of the hanged men had time to scream, a silver blur came hurtling towards them. Not far from the Hinterlands, Jack Skellington was tracing his bony finger over the numerous titles on his bookshelf. He had spent the entire day with the mayor, once again going over the plans for next Halloween. Being the Pumpkin King had always been a stressful job for Jack. Holding auditions, coming up with new ideas for frights, and going over costume designs was only a handful of what Jack accomplished that day. Right now, all he cared about was settling down in his electric chair with a good book and warm cup of pumpkin cider.
Let's see, mused Jack as he studied the book bindings. Reddit, 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 Reddit. Ah, here's one.
Jack pulled out a black-bound book with red and silver lettering.
The Terror of Captain Bloodhook. Great, I could use a comedy.
As he was heading to his chair, he looked over to see Zero gnawing away at a curved bone that looked very familiar. Opening up his shirt and jacket, Jack peered inside to see that Zero had snuck off with one of his ribs again.
So that's where it went, he muttered. Zero!
The ghost dog looked at his master with soulful eyes and recognized his master's tone immediately. He dejectedly gave the rib to Jack, who placed it back in his ribcage. The skeleton just chuckled and shook his head.
You know, Zero, if you need something to chew on, all you have to do is ask.
Jack went over to his chair and pulled out a shriveled arm that he kept from the day's prop discussion. He had decided to take it home as a gift for Zero. Seeing his new toy, Zero did a backflip in the air as his master tossed it to him. The ghost dog caught it neatly between his teeth and floated back down to his bed and continued chewing.
Boy, what a day, Jack sighed as he sipped his cider and got himself comfortable. But at least it's over now, eh, Zero? Nothing left to do but rest and relax.
Just as he was taking another sip, the wailing cat alarm interrupted his thoughts. In surprise, he spit out his cider, spraying it all over poor Zero. After a few good coughs, he went to the window to see what the problem was. In the town square near the fountain, he saw Hanging Tree flailing his limbs around in a panic, shouting something. Many of the residents had come out to try and calm him down, but the tree looked severely spooked, and not in the good way. Jack sighed and shook his wary skull.
Never fails. Whenever I get a moment to myself, something comes up. Come on, Zero, let's go see what's wrong.
Jack made his way through the crowded square as more citizens came out to see the commotion. Hanging Tree was certainly the center of attention, every limb shaking violently. It was hard for anyone to get close without being whacked by one of his branches.
Please, somebody help! He cried frantically. It was terrible, horrible! Oh, why did this happen? Why?
Thanks to Jack's nimbleness, he was able to get close enough to the tree without being struck by a branch.
Easy there, Hanging Tree, he said sternly, but with a hint of comfort.
It's all right, you're safe now. Now please, calm down before you knock us all unconscious.
Seeing the Pumpkin King standing before him sent a wave of relief over Hanging Tree.
Jack! Oh, thank goodness! You have to do something! It almost got away with them all!
With who? Jack asked.
Now that they weren't flailing around, Jack noticed that the hanged men were deftly silent, and that there were only four of them.
Hanging Tree, what's wrong with your men? They've never been so quiet before. And isn't there one missing?
That's what I'm trying to tell you!
Hanging Tree began pacing as he told the events.
We were walking home from my Aunt Maple's Root Day party when we got lost in the Hinterlands. As we were trying to find the right road, we suddenly heard this strange whizzing sound.
The clown nearby snickered.
He said whiz,
he whispered mischievously to Behemoth.
Jack silenced him with a scornful look as the tree continued. The sound got louder and louder, like something was spinning. Out of the corner of my eye, I catch a glimpse of a dark figure standing in the shadows. Then, whoosh! Something flies by my head, and before I know it, Moe's gone! Jack noticed that all the hanged men shuddered simultaneously. He turned back to Hanging Tree. Did you see what the figure was? Hanging Tree shook his head mournfully. When Moe was pulled from my branches, the figure disappeared too. Then I heard bones rattling. I was so scared I was rooted to the spot, literally. Then all was quiet, and when I looked for Moe, this was what I found. Hanging Tree reached behind him, and there, in a pile in the tree's branchy fingers, were the remains of Moe. Every bone and joint was disconnected, and sitting upon the pile was Moe's skull. All the citizens present gasped in horror at the sight. Even the clown found it disgusting and retched in the fountain. Jack merely stared at the pile of bones held before him. As a fellow skeleton, he could only feel the deepest empathy. Did you check to see if all the bones were there? Hanging Tree nodded. Yes, I managed to find at least 200 bones. Please, Jack, you've got to help him. My hanged men won't be the same without Moe. Yes, I noticed, said Jack, looking again at the Silent Brothers. He then turned to the crowd and pointed to Behemoth. Behemoth, go to the pumpkin patch and get your wheelbarrow. We'll need it to take Moe to Dr. Finkelstein's. Willa, Zelda, Jack said, addressing the two witches who ran the witch shop. Take Hanging Tree here and try to whip up something for his nerves. A worried look came over the tree's wooden face as Jack took the bones and placed them in the wheelbarrow. It'll be okay, Hanging Tree, the Pumpkin King assured him. If anyone can fix Moe, the doctor can. I'll have someone fetch you the moment he has recovered.
Alright, so the artichoke. I actually have to say this was good. Wow, just the way you started off this and all these different voices you had for every single character in this scene itself was amazing and good. And you just really brought the story to life. Because I've actually never seen, never seen Nightmare Before Christmas. So
what?
I know a lot of people go, what the heck? You need to watch it. Blah.
It's so good.
I've heard it's like really good, and it's like, you know what? I have to watch it sometime, sit down and watch it, but just haven't really had. Well, I've had time, but. I just have to watch it. Gosh.
It was good.
But for what you did with this, it was really good. I really enjoyed it. And it kind of... It was like... I was kind of wondering after you went from there to... the Jack Skeleton scene. I was just wondering how... Okay, how in the world is this gonna... Is this just gonna end with him in this house? What the heck? And then... It actually did. It did was very good coherent story. I don't know where the heck you found this, but I do not like you right now. Just for the coherent story. Shut up. Okay, so Olivia, what did you think?
Well, I enjoyed it. I really thought it was something interesting. I've seen Nightmare Before Christmas, and I really do enjoy the music from it. I kind of feel like there could have been a little bit more definition between the voices, but other than that, I mean, it was just like, you did a really good job on the voices, so like, that's like being so nitpicky of me to say that. I really did enjoy it, though. Like, you had a pretty good kind of flow going with it throughout the whole entire story, which was nice. And, Zane?
I know.
So
all it takes is one more to become invalid. Yeah, one more.
But either way, I don't have to change my avatar to something basketball-like.
Oh, shut up.
Okay, so I'm excited.
You're really too excited about that.
Yep. Otherwise, you did a great job.
Yeah. Yes, you did. You did a fantastic job. I really think you did a really good job on this. Other than my demeanor right now, just because of the stupid bet, hopefully someone did something actually that was more coherent than this, possibly. A coherent story, another coherent story, because that way I don't have to change my avatar to anything else. But that's neither here nor there. I'm done with him anyways. Good job.
You did a great job.
Yeah, I'm done. Anything?